McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour here on K104. We've got Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry. Good morning to you. And ladies, I hope everybody's doing okay today.
Doing good.
What?
That's all we get is a
Yeah, me and my sound effect. No, we're doing good. Okay. I was just trying to communicate non-verbally. That's all.
All right.
Why?
So before we started recording, Carol asked if you were in the basement today at Mom and Dad's. Are you there?
I am still live from the basement. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Keeping in mind, I mean, not that anybody but me is counting, but my house originally broke ground in early September. What are we now?
Oh my gosh.
What are we now, guys? What month are we in? Are we still January? Barely.
We're almost February.
No, right, we're not. February? I think by the time this airs, it's going to be February. No? Yep. Yes? No?
No.
Yes?
Yep. February starts on Monday.
Okay. So we're a day before February. September, October, November, December, January. 100?
That's 5 months, yes. So 5 times, 150 days.
Right. Twice as long as I thought this was going to take. And we're not quite done yet. We are absolutely not quite done yet. But we're getting there, because now where we are at, just in case anybody's wondering, following my diary of a home reno wino, which I'm going to rename to home reno winer, is we're at the final. I think last week we kind of touched on this and I got a little bit excited because Carol got excited because she knows better than me how much longer things are going to take at this point, having done this for a lot of her life. But we have one coat of paint on the walls. Nice. My fantabulous, the tile is going in this week. So I think that really does mean we're getting close.
Yep.
And the fabulous, unique, way too expensive floating staircase is also being installed. In fact, by the time people are within the sound of our voices today, it probably will have been fully installed.
So you'll no longer need to get to your second floor via a ladder.
Correctamundo. But here's what happened. So I am such a little, I'm like a monkey. Like, I have always been drawn to climbing things as a child.
Really?
On into my adulthood. Yes. Seriously. And it never occurred to me that now that I'm an adult, I mean, as a kid, I was like a gymnast, you know, et cetera. But as an adult who 99% of the time can be found wearing a heel that is over 3.5 inches tall, no matter what I am doing or where I am, it didn't occur to me that you can't scale, ascend and descend a, I don't know, 18-foot ladder the way you used to when you were 10.
Right. Well, also when you were 10, you weren't wearing 3-inch heels or higher.
Oh, she probably was.
I think I was. So as it happened, I stopped by the house to check on things and put a little pin in that because I've got more on that story in a minute. I stopped by the house to check on things, and lo and behold, the old stairs were gone, completely gone. And in the old stair place was a tall, narrow ladder. And the new stairs, which had yet to be installed, were laying on their side in the living room on the floor. Well, I wanted to get up to that second floor because I wanted to check out the paint and I wanted to see what else had been done up there. You know, they're putting in some plumbing stuff and I just wanted to see. So I wasn't going to let a little thing like a ladder get in my way. So up I go. Mind you, guys, by myself, no one to save me, no way to yell for help, no nothing except my determination and my attitude. So up I go, Now, getting up the ladder was pretty easy. It was getting from the ladder to the landing that posed a challenge.
Oh, my God. Which
I didn't think. And, you know, once you're all the way up there, like, my choice was either figure out how to get onto the landing safely, or I was going to have to admit defeat and just climb down the ladder, which, A, would not have made for a good story. B, is not who I am. So I managed to stick out a leg and an arm and get myself onto the landing with very little panic. Okay, I did what I had to do on the second floor. The problem, guys, happened when I had to get from the landing to the ladder, because you don't realize it, but that's a whole other ball game. That is a whole other perspective. That poses a whole other set of challenges. And I don't know, Frank, when's the last time you were on the ladder like that, Frank and Barry? I mean, maybe you can relate.
Well, actually, I was kind of stupid once when I was with the ex, and we owned our home, and I was painting the place, and I got up on a ladder, extended it as high as it could possibly go so I could paint above the windows on the second floor. So, yes, I'm very well aware of ladders, though mine was a little shaky.
And so was mine. So now here I am like an idiot on the second floor of my house with no other way to get down to the first floor than to take this ladder. There's no back stairs. There's no pulley system. There's no way that I can now get off this second floor without taking a leap, literally. So I'm like, oh no. I had to figure out a way to safely get back on this ladder from this landing. So you know what I did?
What'd you do?
Go ahead.
I first of all, I said, thank God nobody's here to record this, because this is about to get ugly. I actually had to like get down on my belly, because for some reason, whenever you're in trouble like that, getting down on your belly flat for some reason is just, I don't know, comforting. Like nothing can get me down here. I got down on my belly flat and I swung my legs over to the ladder and then kind of pulled the ladder a little closer to me with my feet and then reached behind me with one arm to grab the ladder and then slid the rest of my body over to the ladder until I was hugging it like it was a long lost dog. And then I was able to scale back down the ladder safely.
Were you wearing a skirt?
No, but don't ask me what kind of footwear I was wearing, because I assure you it was not flat.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question there, Spielborg, because I can imagine all of this in your freaking heels. Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, they weren't my highest of heels, but they certainly were not flat shoes.
I'm sorry. You know what I got an image of instead is you saying that I'm not going to be able to make it from the landing to the ladder, and instead calling the fire department, standing out one of your windows, waiting for them to blow up one of those big cushions so you can jump out.
No, would have been fun.
I was actually just starting to get that image. Did you carry your phone up to the second floor with you?
Yes, I carried my phone up to the second floor.
Because honest Scott, so you're creative and you have a really vivid imagination. If you had somehow kicked that ladder away, what would you have done?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, because you guys got to keep something in mind. It's not just a matter of life and death for me. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is my image and not being embarrassed, right? Yep. So, like, I would rather die cool than live all embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like, who wouldn't, you know?
We all feel that way, Jonna.
So let's explore your options. What would you have done?
Oh boy. All right. I'll tell you one thing that did run through my mind, because I did consider this. Okay. I was going to try to hang off the second story, like lower my feet down, but hang from, you know, my armpits, to see how much, like, maybe that would only be like a 5-foot drop that I could do, you know, without breaking my tibia. I was thinking of doing that. is my tibia down there? Is your tibia?
I don't know.
In your leg?
Just who would get specific about what bone and choose the tibia?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
It's like years ago in college, we had a guy that I went to school with, and we still talk to him to this day. But he always had this kind of old man way about him, even back in the college days. And we were playing intramural football, and he got knocked out, and he ended up on the ground on his back. And instead of just saying, "Oh, my back," he said, "Oh, my lower lumbar vertebrae."
Yeah.
So that's kind of the same thing here. Instead exactly. of you just falling and breaking your leg, you would break your tibia.
Because, Frankenberry, it sounds more dramatic.
It does. It does.
Well, yeah. But like I said, I'd rather die cool, you know.
We know this. All right. So let me ask you something. Do you still have, like, linens and things up? Was there anything? Like, could you no. have tied successive bed sheets together and shimmied down a rope?
No, there is nothing like that on that second floor. The only thing, now that you mention it, that may have worked, and if I had gotten this desperate, I would have probably thought of it, is there is a chair, kind of like a club chair, that's located up there in my old bedroom, which will now be a guest bedroom. I probably could have dropped that down to the floor below, which would have given me a couple more feet to not fall, and then lowered myself onto that. I could have maybe done that.
You know what I'm thinking you could have done? You could have taken possibly an extra large pillowcase, scrunched all the corners together, jumped, and hoped that it would turn into a parachute.
Mary Poppins.
Oh, remember that survivalist guy we had on the show one time? We actually did a live event with him. And didn't he show us how to make a rope out of like grocery plastic bags?
Yes.
Well, I remember him telling us how to do that, but you guys actually saw it.
Yes.
Yeah, but wait, scratch that, Frankenberry. She doesn't have any grocery bags in her house.
Oh, correct.
Even absent a renovation.
Right. Jonna hasn't been into a grocery store since the mid-80s.
Yeah. That's true, but I do get groceries delivered, but you know, we don't have plastic bags.
Right. Right.
You know. Anyway, the long and the short of it is I managed to actually get down the ladder. And I have a brand new appreciation for many, many tradespeople, including my father, who at his age goes up and down ladders all the time as a painting contractor. So, you know, there's a little bit of that in my blood, which is probably why I was able to survive and handily get up and down without, you know, dying, is my guess.
Right. And thankfully, there's no lead in paint anymore to be in your blood. So you're in good shape.
So that worked. But I will say, can I just add another thing? I know people are probably getting bored with my house topic. And I promise you, it is coming to an end soon, I hope. But speaking of those stairs that were on the floor waiting to get installed, I think way back when this renovation started happening, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys may or may not remember. I thought I like pitched to you a potential HGTV show that was kind of a combination of Bridezilla meets Property Brothers, right? And we could call it Renozilla. And right. I was joking back then. Back in September, I was joking. But now I'm not joking so much because I kind of had an episode which would have been a perfect pilot for said show.
Uh-oh.
I did. And it involved those stairs, but you guys are going to back me on this. So what happened is part of this renovation, and listen, I do not have a design degree. I don't. I just think I know everything about everything, and I don't. But one of the things that was very important to me with this house was to have a feature where I blew out a wall so that when you walk into the house, all you see are windows and water. And that's it. So when you walk in, you have a moment. And I was assured that this particular wall could come out to serve that purpose. I spent extra money on these floating stairs, these open back stairs, so that the only thing that would interfere with the view would be these open back stairs. And it was an investment. But it was all connected. And I was assured this was going to happen. Well, lo and behold, we're coming down the home stretch. And I walk into the house before I scaled the ladder a few days before. And the wall that had been partially taken down was now fully put back up. So that's not the way you want your construction to go, as you can imagine. So I had to, you know, find people and ask questions. I'm like, why is it this wall was already halfway down? Why is it now fully put back up? Who didn't get the memo? Blah, blah, blah. Long story short, somebody tried to tell me that I can no longer have that wall removed because load bearing, because engineering, because it's going to do this and we're going to have to go in the basement and do that. And a million excuses. And I went berserk, like literally berserk. I didn't even try, guys. I didn't even try to have a modicum of class or composure. I think the phrase, "You've ruined my life," came out of my mouth at least a half a dozen times to various people who probably didn't even know my name or my connection to the property. Like, I didn't even recognize myself. But here's why. I mean, because look, it's not just because this is what I want and that's the name of that tune. We are in a new year. We are in 2021. We have come off a really crappy year, 2020. In 2020, we have all done what? All of us, no matter what your life experience, in 2020, we have all settled. We had to settle for wearing masks. We had to settle for being locked down. We had to settle for not working the way we used to. We had to settle for worrying about getting sick. We had to settle, settle, settle. So when 2021 came around a month ago, I said to myself, self, 2021, I am not going to settle. I am going to unsettle. I am going to be unsettled because and all of us should do this. I'm going to make 2021 the year of Jonna. Just like Frankenberry, you should make 2021 the year of Frankenberry. Carol, the year of Carol. And that was my mindset when somebody told me what I wanted wasn't going to happen. And I spun around like a Tasmanian devil and accused the entire world of ruining my life. But guess what? That wall came down.
Let me ask you, Jonna, when you screamed that you ruined my life, was it followed by stomping feet and I hate you?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I hate you and I'm moving out.
And do I need to get ready to send out sympathy cards to all those poor bastards who don't know you but had to deal with that?
You should ask, because my Tasmanian moment was followed by my apology tour. Okay, so I'm getting used to this year of Jonna. It's going to take, maybe it might take a month or two. But yeah, when I'm wrong and obnoxious, I own it. And I just wanted to explain to you why it happened. It wasn't just a matter of me being spoiled. It's a matter of me making a decision to have a year exactly the way I want it. And you guys should do the same.
Now, let me ask you something, because we spoke about this wall that shouldn't have existed last week. Did you get involved in the demo of that wall?
See, now that's right, because that's exactly what I intended to do.
Right.
And I didn't. And here's why I didn't. Because I remembered that there is some mechanical stuff inside that wall that I didn't want to hit and hurt myself. So I left that up to the professionals. Yes.
Okay.
Understood.
So the wall came down, and lo and behold, but here's the thing, you guys, lo and behold, magically, they found a way to make that wall structurally sound without the many excuses that they were trying to feed me when they didn't want to take down the wall. So, okay. So good.
So far the year of Jonna is going well.
It's going pretty well. I have a few less friends, but other than that, it's going okay.
Well, Jonna, I have a feeling they weren't really all that much close friends in the first place, so you're probably okay.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping. So that's, you're all up to date now on me. And I really do think in a couple of weeks, I will be broadcasting from there. And that'll be a whole new world. No Wi-Fi problems. No mice. Well, maybe mice. We'll see.
What are we going to talk about?
I don't know. We'll find something, I'm sure.
Oh, I do have another question. So first coat of paint is on. You were talking to us last week that you let your father, who has been painting, owns a painting company for 50 years, choose right. The colors. How do you like the colors?
Oh, my God. I got to tell you. Love, love, love. And I'm going to give you guys a tip for anybody who's interested. My new favorite color, which is on an accent wall on the two fireplaces, is called peppercorn. And it is fabulous. So the color palette of the house is basically various shades of gray. Like the rooms are, it's not all one shade of gray. Like different rooms have slightly different gray hues to it. And the accent walls are this peppercorn. And I got to tell you guys, I'm in I'm in love. I'm in love. It's really nice.
I saw a picture. It's like a dark charcoal, right?
It's like a dark charcoal with an under, with a little warm, almost brown, but it's definitely not brown.
Right.
It's, yeah, it's a really cool color. And that's just one coat. What you saw was one coat. That needs another coat. So, yeah, I'm really happy with that. And I didn't pick the colors. My father picked all the colors. I didn't. Very cool. I didn't have a say. I think the most I said to him was, you know, I like gray. And boom, off to the races.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's where we are. Your update. I hope if any of my builders are listening to this show today, once again, I am sorry.
And Carol and I are glad you're all still breathing.
Thank you.
Who are we talking to today?
Oh, so this is really good. So today we are talking to a doctor who I love when we have guests on the show who have done TED Talks, because I know you and I both, Carol, are very interested in one day doing one ourselves. So we have, he is basically a motivator to athletes near and far, and he's written several books about, you know, like the mental rules for golf and full throttle, all basically high performance principles, because he's a psychologist. And his newest book is called Fall Up. And it's basically, he teaches techniques on how you can take something bad and actually turn it into something good. And again, here we are at a perfect time to be discussing that kind of concept and that kind of topic. So when we come back from our break, we're going to be talking to Dr. Greg Steinberg, who is a professor of human performance and author and motivational speaker. And that's all coming up after our break.
All right. Cool. That sounds good.
And then
good.
Maybe you'll learn how to fall up a ladder.
Was, you know what, Carol? You beat me to it. I was thinking the same thing. That title is perfect, Jonna, if there had been an accident.
Oh, God.
You know,
right?
Coming down the ladder, you could have just hit the ground and fallen up.
It's fallen up.
All right. That is on the way here. You've got Happy Hour with Jonna Spillborn and Carol Pesci, and we will be right back. So please stick around. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here again this morning with Jonna Spillborn and Carol Pesci here on K104. I'm Frankenberry, and it is segment number two, which is, of course, is where we get to our guest. And today we are going to be talking to Dr. Greg Steinberg. And I think, Jonna, you know all about him right now.
Yeah, I am really happy that we have with us today Dr. Greg Steinberg, who I'll tell you a little bit about him. He's a professor of human performance in Nashville, Tennessee. Golf Digest ranked him as one of the world's greatest sports psychologists. Now, I know we've talked about this in the past. Normal people like us, when we employ the same techniques that some of these elite athletes employ, it can really enhance your life or change your life. And so Dr. Steinberg focuses in that area. He's written a number of books, including Full Throttle, Flying Lessons and Mental Rules for Golf. Gee, can I talk today? Mental Rules for Golf. He's worked and appeared for the New York Times, USA Today, and the Wall Street Journal. He's appeared on numerous television shows, including one of my old favorites, Dancing with the Stars, to discuss mental toughness, and was a sports psychology expert for Fox News during the 2008 Summer Olympics. Dr. Greg has also given a TED Talk, which, guys, I've watched and I absolutely love. And it's called Fall Up, which explains how to become super resilient. And ironically, Fall Up is the title of his latest book and what we're going to be talking about today. So, Dr. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're really excited. This is one of these topics. I mean, you're an expert in a field that I think can benefit so many people. And especially, we were talking in our first segment that, you know, we're all coming out of a really crappy year where we kind of, nobody felt like they had a superpower. Nobody felt like we could get ahead. And, you know, and we couldn't, right, for obvious reasons. But now here we are, I think, ready to feel renewed and refreshed and get our lives back on track. So let's talk about Fall Up and how that might help us do exactly that. So what's the premise of your book?
Well, like you said, the bottom line is 2020 was tough on everybody. People lost loved ones. their lost jobs. Lives change dramatically, but instead of being down and depressed, you can fall up. You can use adversity as a superpower. And that's what my TED Talk was about. That's what the book's about. But really, let me tell you the background story. Actually, it happened about 10 years ago. I teach sports psychology at my university, and I have a friend of mine speak to the class. His name's David Metter. He's the national blind golf champion. And yes, he plays golf blind, and he tells the class how to do that. But he also told the class that his blindness allowed him to be a better person, to be more empathetic, to be more focused, to be more successful. And so that really fascinated me. So what I did was I interviewed people like David who had a tragedy. And what I discovered is that not only did they have this tragedy, but literally they went through these stages, these five specific stages, and they turned their tragedy into transcendence, just like David. Literally, it was the first stage was a wake-up call where they realized they weren't on a path they should be. And then the second stage was they flipped a switch where they realized the tragedy had significance for them, and they had to go in a new direction. And because they had to go in a new direction, they found strengths and talents they never knew existed, which ultimately is the third stage, is they released their genius, which led to the fourth stage, is they discovered their life song, which is their true purpose in life. And ultimately, they made purpose a verb, which is the fifth stage. So what was fascinating with this research, and I describe in the book, is that this terrible moment in life actually put them on the path they had to be, they were meant to be, and they found their ultimate purpose. And we see that a lot. You know, you see that all the time. You see people that had this terrible tragedy, their son or daughter died from cancer, and they started a charity, and now they thrive in that charity. I mean, we see it all the time. Even a famous story is Michael J. Fox, you know, the famous actor who suffers from Parkinson's, but he calls his Parkinson's a gift because he says now he found his true purpose, which is he started his foundation to discover a cure for Parkinson's.
Which is amazing. That's right. The way you describe it is similar to, like, we've heard of the, I don't want to compare what you're talking about to death, but whenever I hear the five stages, I immediately, that's what I think of, right? The way we go from somebody close to us dying and grieving and finally accepting the situation because you don't have a choice. And in a way, I guess this might be similar. If something like this happens to you, like Michael J. Fox and his Parkinson's, or like losing a limb, for example, or the man you described who loses his eyesight, you don't have much of a choice. You can either wallow in it and be completely unhappy, or you can, I don't want to flippantly say, make the best of it. But what is it that spurs us to do that? Because some people might just wallow in it and die a slow and painful death and be completely unhappy. How do you flip that switch?
Well, let me just go back a step. And you're right. You were talking about the Kubler-Ross stages of grieving. And her final stage that she always stated was acceptance. And I'm saying that acceptance isn't the final stage. David Metter didn't accept his life. He transcended. And actually, transcendence is the final stage. And then within that transcendent stage, there are stages. But to answer this, the second part of your question is, I'm not quite sure how people can do it, because what I discovered is it's almost like this tragedy quiets all the noise and distraction in their life, and they can finally hear their life song. And then they move in the direction they were meant to be. What I really say in the book is, and the point of the book is, that you don't need a tragedy to live your life song, to find your purpose. You need to, as I say, you have to flip the switch. You have to basically have the wake up call and move in the direction you're meant to be. But the ultimate goal is that you have to have the wake up call and realize you're not on the path you're meant to be. You're not as happy as you should be. And you must move in a new direction. Now, tragedy pushes you that way, but you don't need tragedy or an extreme hardship to do that. You just have to know that you're not on the path you're meant to be, and you must move in a new direction.
That makes a lot of sense. And that can really resonate with even more people, because we don't want to sit here and hope for tragedy in order for us to get better. I guess that's just one possible motivation. And a lot of people are feeling that. I think a lot of people, at some point, you feel so discontented, but then you don't know what to do with your discontent. And you don't know how to turn that feeling or allow that feeling to motivate you into a new direction. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story that happened to me, that I was waking up at 3 a.m. I know a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh, yeah.
I was feeling this anxiety feeling, you know, this kind of a hole of depression, you might say. And I don't know why I was feeling that. I was a professor. I was living a good life. And then I saw Dr. Phil on Oprah. Remember when he was on Oprah on Tuesdays before he had a show? And he was talking about a lady who was in a bad relationship, and she was having the same feeling that I had, except I was in a bad relationship with my career. And I realized, instead of just being a professor, I needed to write books, I needed to speak. And once I started doing that, really moving in the direction I was meant to be, that feeling, that emptiness in the middle of the night went away. And the point I'm making with the story is, I think what happens to a lot of people is their physiology will call them out. When they're not in their purpose, when they're not in their path, they know it. They feel it. Their physiology calls to them. That's the wake-up call. But they just have to commit to then move in the direction they're meant to be.
Yeah. See, and I think a lot of people, again, are experiencing that. And then they just don't know. They don't know what to do with it until, you know, you're just either so unhappy that is kind of your fall in terms of, you know, being able to fall up. And a lot of people experience that.
No, I'm sorry, Jonna. Dr. Greg, I have a question for you. You mentioned something that you don't, and John and I both, actually, Frankenberry, Jonna and I have all had really difficult things happen, and we've all responded in empowering ways in our own ways. And I've had really difficult things happen in my past that, in retrospect, are a complete gift. But you spoke to, you don't have to have this tragic event to alter the course of your life for good. My question for you is, there could be somebody listening right now who their resume looks great, right? Like, I look at, someone could be saying, I look at my life and the things are actually pretty good. And other people looking at that would say, you should be grateful. But yet that person feels discontent. They don't feel right in their life, even though the circumstances are ideal. Is that point when you got to listen to your physiology or get in touch with, yes, you have a right to feel that way. Understand better why, because you're missing fulfillment or something. Like, how do you identify that?
Well, I think the goal in everyone's life should be strive for better. That you always need to have that growth mindset to keep on becoming a better person, becoming better in business, becoming better in your relationships. That's what makes us thrive. And I think what happens is, if you're not on the path you're meant to be, you probably stop that growth potential. But I think also, I think what's going on is, even though those people look good on the outside, they know it's not the right fit for them on the inside. They know it. They can feel it. Maybe it relates to that they're not really in line with their purpose. They're not using their true strengths and values, but ultimately they know it. And so then it becomes a choice to whether they want to move in the direction they're meant to be and follow that path, or stay in the path that they have. Now, some people can do it because it's easier for them, but other people can't because they have a mortgage, they have 3 kids in college, and then it becomes very difficult. But at the same time, I think the prize at the end is worth it, because I think when you, like Michael J. Fox was saying, that you would think Parkinson's is this terrible issue that he has, but he calls it a gift because it forced him to move in the path that he was meant to be.
Yeah, I wish we didn't need to feel forced. You know, I wish it would come to us so naturally.
Well, sometimes it does. You know, for lucky people, I think I'm lucky. I think I fell in love with school and learning and psychology, and I just kind of fell into my niche. Some people, it's not as easy as that. But I think if you are always searching, you're always thriving, you have a growth mindset, you're always willing to get out of your comfort zone, you can find the path. Now, again, if you look at me, I didn't change my career as a professor. I just kind of altered it and started speaking and writing books. And I think that's another avenue that a lot of people and a lot of the listeners can take, is they don't have to totally change their career, but maybe they have to, within their career, move in alternate directions. And if you look at what I've done, that I was a professor, but I moved in a alternate direction. I started writing books and speaking, and that helped me. So I think a lot of people don't have to completely change their career, but they have to move in a direction that fits within their strengths, values, and purpose. And then they'll be on the path that they were meant to be.
Yeah. And again, see, you make a lot of sense. And I think one of the things where I think people fall short, and maybe one of the reasons why sometimes it does take a tragedy to motivate us, is because we don't understand what our true purpose is. And part of the way we get there and to figure out what our true purpose is to feel so uncomfortable that you know wherever you are right now must not be it, unless that's a really roundabout way to go about it. But does that make sense?
Well, that's the hardest question you could ever answer, is what is your purpose? What is your why? I tell my students in college, every class, I say, your number one goal in college is not to graduate, not to get a career, but ultimately to set yourself up for a great life so that when you're 40, you wake up and you say, wow, I get to go to work. I mean, how awesome would that be? And you can do it, but it's a lot of soul searching. You know, there's two secrets to self-help. One is the old, you know, Zen statement, when the student is ready, the teacher will come, because the student must be ready for the teacher to come. But ultimately, it starts with self-awareness. The teacher will never come without self-awareness. If you're not completely aware of your unhappiness, and that you're not aware that you're not really where you should be, the teacher will never come. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, in The Secret, the law of attraction, is that, you know, once you're on that path that you were meant to be, the universe opens up to you. And I think that's true to a certain extent, is that once you're basically totally thriving in the path that you're meant to be, because you will thrive. Once you find that path, you will thrive. The world will open up to you.
I totally, completely agree with that. And since you mentioned work, and if we could talk about work for a minute, because I think there are a lot of people in life who you've been, you know, say, for example, you're in a certain career and you're going along and you're making enough money and you're happy in that way. But you don't, like you said, you don't, to your students, you don't actually wake up and go, wow, yay, I get to go to work today. In fact, a lot of people, I kind of get mad at some of my staff on Monday. They'll post something on Facebook like, oh boy, whoever invented a 2-day weekend was really dumb. Like, and that bothers me, because I don't want people to feel like, oh, just another day at the office. And how is there a way to figure out when you either need a new career in order to feel happy, or whether you can make the career that you're in more satisfying? Like, is that some sort of subtle shift, or is that just an individual thing that we got to figure out for ourselves?
John, I'm going to jump in here and say that was a really awesome question.
Thank you.
Yes, that is an awesome question. Okay. Well, you Martin Seligman, Dr. Martin Seligman, wrote this book called Authentic Happiness. You know, he started the movement of positive psychology, and I looked up to him. He's just a wonderful person to be as a role model. He, in his book, Authentic Happiness, he talks about recrafting your career. And he's basically saying that a lot of times when you are in a career that you can't change, you must recraft it. Somehow, for instance, let's say you're very creative, and that's a strength that you have, and you're not using it. Well, if you use your creativity every day, you're going to be happier in that career. And again, some people can change their career, but some people can't. They're 45, they have a mortgage, they have 3 kids in college. It'd be very difficult to switch their path. But at the same time, they can recraft their career to be in line with their values, their purpose, and their strengths. And that's what Dr. Seligman's talking about, is recrafting their career.
Dr. Greg, is that one of the things you help people do, is to, because some people may feel murky, right? Like they feel unsettled, they don't feel right, they're not happy, but how do you gain clarity? Is that one of the first things you do, is help people get clearer on their values, number one, to align more with that?
Well, if you look at positive psychology, and Martin Seligman emphasizes this, I think, the most in positive psychology in terms of happiness, is that if you're using your strengths every day, and of course, you're aligned with your values, you're going to be, you know, when we say happy, we don't mean like smiling, laughing. We mean fulfilled. He talks about it being a life satisfaction. And I think that's one of the keys, that if you're using your strengths every day at work and it's in line with your values and your, let's say, mission statement, you are going to be more fulfilled. And you know, the idea, you know, the idea of follow up and the wake up call is really that your unhappiness calls to you. You know it. You know if you're not that happy. You know if you're not that content. It calls to you at night like it did for me. It calls to you where you you just try to distract yourself. Maybe you go, you know, watch TV at night and, you know, whatever. But the idea is you do things to avoid the question we always have to ask ourselves is this our true purpose? That's the question we're meant to ask. And when we're in line and we answer that, and the answer is yes, we have that sincere contentment. We have that peace that we all seek. And when the answer is no, you're not aligned with your true purpose, your physiology calls to you, your discontentment calls to you, but you know it. And that's the self-awareness that you have to accept. And once you do, then you can move in the direction that you need to.
I love that you say that discontent calls to you, because I have learned the hard way, as we learn often best times the hard way, that you're, and I want people who are listening to you right now to understand, when you're unhappy, please don't judge yourself for that. That you shouldn't feel that way. That's a genuine human emotion. And it's calling to you. Just what you said, it's calling to you. So you were better off not judging it, not pushing it away, but hearing it and communicating with it.
Yeah, do you agree? That's self-awareness. You know, that self-awareness is the first step to enlightenment. And I know that sounds kind of corny, but the idea is that the self-awareness is that you become aware of your discontentment. Some people disregard it. Some people don't listen to it. Some people just
judge it.
They distract themselves. They go play golf every day. They do things that they don't have to answer the question. And when you answer the question, and the question is, no, I'm not on my path, then you can either choose to do something about it, or stick in the mud and just not be as happy as you should be. And of course, the goal in your life should be true contentment, true peace of mind, and really following your purpose.
Absolutely. And that's great advice. And I think, you know, once you figure out that you're unhappy, becoming happy doesn't have to mean, you know, burning the boats, so to speak. Becoming happy can mean even subtle shift.
Absolutely.
Once you figure out the source of your unhappiness. We could go on, but Dr. Egg, this is very, very enlightening. And if people want to connect with you, of course, the book is called Fall Up, and that's available. Is that available everywhere, Dr. Greg?
Yeah, everywhere you can buy a book.
Okay, fantastic. So Fall Up, and you also have a few other titles to your name. And if they want to connect with you, because you had something also, do you still offer a course in emotional toughness?
Yeah, so really the best thing people could do is if they went to drgregsteinberg.com, and it's Dr. and then Greg, G-R-E-G-G, Steinberg, S-T-E-I-N-B-E-R-G.com. You can see my TED Talk, my Fall Up TED Talk. You could look at the, I have a few online courses, Emotional Toughness University, and then I also have a golf psychology course and a tennis psychology course. But really, they can see all those courses on that main hub of my website.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
I'm going to be visiting myself. So we've been speaking with Dr. Greg Steinberg, author of Fall Up and many other titles. Dr. Greg, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Yes, Dr. Greg, we do appreciate it. And thanks again, everybody out there who's listening right now. Please stick with us, though. We're not done yet. We've got segment number 3 on the way with Jonna Spillborn and Carol Pesci. This is Happy Hour, and please hang in there.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's happy hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's happy hour with Donna and Carol.
And this is Happy Hour here on K104, and we're back one more time this morning with Donna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
We're getting on track. Getting on track. I like it.
It's only 11 months later.
Yeah, tell me about it. It only took 11 months of practice, but we finally got it down. Dr. Greg Steinberg and his new book called Fall Up, he was very good. Definitely gave us some insights that I'm sure folks could use if you got a chance to catch the interview earlier.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people, I think, don't even realize how useful this information is. If you're feeling, unsettled, if you're feeling discontent and you've been feeling that way for a while and you can't figure out why, we don't have to stay there, guys. And it's not like we have to wholesale, leave our marriages and move to another city and start all over. You can, once you figure out that you're unhappy, subtle changes can be enough, or big changes, but it just doesn't have to be big. Don't be afraid of your discontent, I guess, is my point.
Right. And don't judge it. God, I learned that. Like, I shouldn't, because I went through that period where my quote unquote resume was good, in a good marriage, had enough money, like in a nice home, like I had all those things around me, but there was still some serious discontent within. And it mm-hmm. took some, I know it sounds cliche, but some soul searching. And the first thing I had to learn was to, because I felt like I had no right to feel that, right? Like,
right.
Wow, people would kill
how
for
dare
what you.
Right.
Oh my God. So, and I had to first let go of that judgment and just say, you know what? That's how I feel. That's my truth. That was step number one. And step number two was saying, okay, so why do I feel that way? And not be afraid of it. And really kind of, I had to literally communicate with my unhappiness. Honest to God, I would ask it questions. I would write it out.
Wow.
And I would say, why are you here? How are you here to help me? What, instead of saying, good way, I shouldn't feel this way. And man, have things changed for the better for me since then.
Now, when you asked yourself those questions, was that when you were sitting on a park bench and people were crossing the street to walk around you?
No. I did this in the quiet of my home office.
Oh, okay.
And I did it
okay.
in writing.
Just checking.
Yeah.
It's just stories I had heard. That's all.
Well, and that was a big part of what I wrote about in Hello Beautiful, about how reconciling with yourself, like coming together with the whole of you, all of you, and stop judging yourself for being human.
Right.
It just makes it worse. But he was great. I really enjoyed our talk with him.
Yeah. And there definitely is something to that. There really is. So anyway, I wanted to go into something because I came across a weird question during the week that was posted online. And I remembered that back in the day, we used to sometimes pose these weird questions in our final segment of the show and then just sort of bat them about. And I thought, let's go a little retro. Why don't we go ahead and do that again? Because, and I don't know why this question struck me, maybe because of what I do for a living, but here's the question, and then I'll get your opinions on it. So somebody had posted on Facebook, if your husband, wife, significant other requested that you unfriend or block somebody on social media so that you couldn't have any contact or see their posts or whatever, would you do it? Like, and I'm assuming that the person meant, like, let's say there was an ex-boyfriend in your life, Carol, or something, who would pop up every now and then, and Craig was insecure about that and said, you know what, I would really rather you block that person and not communicate with that person on social media. Do you willingly oblige, or do you say, hey, you got nothing to worry about, and I got to be me?
I think if the source of that, like, if it was an insecurity in a relationship kind of thing, like you just mentioned, I would explore that insecurity further before I would block the person. Like, let's get at why you need to even raise this question. If, however, there was somebody I was connected with on social media and on a regular basis, like every time Craig got home at night, I'd start bitching away because this person upset me and brought negativity in my life, and his request came from that place, then I probably would. So I guess it depends on the intention.
That's a great answer. Frank and Barry?
Oh, great. I got to follow Carol now?
Yes.
She's a tough act to follow.
See, I've been able to stay away from this whole brilliant question, stupid question, follow Carl kind of thing, Johnny. You're the one that keeps falling in that hole. No, hey, look, I will agree with Carol. I mean, it really, it matters where the question, or it matters where that comes from. What right. is the reason behind your significant other saying, I really need you to block that person? And then you say why, and then they tell you, and it might be something like Carol said, that needs to be explored on its own. You know, the block right. doesn't even matter anymore, because now you've brought up something else that's more important, because it's going to affect more than just their concerns over you talking to an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend on Facebook.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think a question like that and the response to a question like that can really blow up into something bigger. You know, does it come from a place of insecurity? Or, you know, I personally, I know that if somebody told me to do something, I don't care whether it's that or, you know, you could tell me to, you know, put the cap on the toothpaste. Once you tell me to do it, my immediate reaction is usually to buck against it. And then I'll settle in and figure out if there's really a good reason behind it. And if there is, then I'll go ahead and do it. And I think that's a little bit human nature, you know, probably for a lot of people. But if somebody wants me to do something for the benefit of them, of the other person, it better be coming from a place of great motivation, or I'm not going to be motivated. As opposed to if somebody wants you to do something for your own benefit, if they can see something that you can't. But the jealousy thing, if it's just coming from that, I would say absolutely not, because you're just going to get the person who blocks the person is going to get resentful that the other person doesn't trust him or her. And it just gets bigger. I mean, that's like right. a Band-Aid of something that needs stitches.
Correctamundo.
Yeah. Nice. Jonna, I might even say that was a brilliant answer.
You know, they're few and far between, but we got to keep up with this Curly, you know. It ain't easy.
I'm with you there. Yeah. I'm with you there.
Anywho, all right, well, that was you know, that was interesting. I avoided posting a response to this person on social media, but for this reason, because I wanted to run it by you guys first. Okay.
All right. Well, we appreciate that you would like our input on some of this type stuff.
Yeah.
And allow us to contribute to your brilliance.
Exactly. Yeah. So you beat me to it again, Carol. You are on it today. Like a couple of weeks ago, you were like, boom, right there all morning. And
I know.
And you're there again now. You keep pulling these words right out of my mouth, lady.
All right. ESP. I've been meditating a lot.
Okay.
Same. You've been meditating. I've been climbing ladders. Tomato, and tomato.
And I've been hanging out with cats. All right. This has been Happy Hour with John Spielborg and Carol Pesci. And thanks again to Dr. Greg Steinberg and his latest book, Fall Up, for joining us earlier today. Now, future reference, if for some reason you missed that interview and you would like to catch it because it could offer you some advice that you could use, well, you just go to K104.com/happyhour, and sometime later on this coming week is when that will be posted. And we'll be back again next Sunday, as we always are, right here, 7 o'clock. So please join us then, and until then, be safe, be good.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spielborg and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.